So this morning, I've been asked to do something which is impossible, but I will try my best. I've been asked to speak effectively about the topic of forgiveness within about a 45-minute time frame. So this is a challenge, since I teach this course for 15 or 20 hours, but I will try to touch on some significant points, the spiritual essence of how I have understood forgiveness and how I think it can help us. The topic entails both spiritual and psychological aspects of when we do the workshop. The first point I would like to present, which is, it deals not only with forgiveness, but it deals with a general principle, which I refer to as alignment, or aligning what our philosophy teaches with how we live our lives. And so I teach forgiveness both in workshops and in situations like this where I'm traveling and I'm asked to speak for an hour or two. And because I've been doing this probably for like 7 years now, I've become well aware of the problem within our movement. A lot of devotees have difficulty with forgiving when they're hurt, and many older devotees have difficulty, and they're staying outside the movement. They were hurt previously, and it's affected them today, and they're not able to participate. Other people just come to ISKCON with problems with siblings or parents or some former grudge they're holding, and they become devotees and they're not able to give it up. Or something happens after they're devotees with family, husband, wife. Whatever. So, I think one of the most interesting things about this phenomenon is the fact that it exists. And why do I say that? Because for two reasons. One reason is that our philosophy is founded in the principle of karma. And not only is it founded in karma, but we take it even a step higher to where we understand through Bhagavatam that Krishna is reducing our karmic reaction so that whatever happens to us, we see that we deserve worse. And Krishna has minimized it. And in the Brahmacharya Ashram, you can read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if someone disturbs you, you should think Krishna has sent this person to give you an opportunity to become more humble than a blade of grass. Right? That's up there. Very nice. So, you look at that philosophy, right? Whatever happens to you is a reaction to what you've done. But if you're a devotee, it's not even deserved. You deserve worse. Plus, if Krishna sends someone to you to disturb you, it's just his mercy because he's giving you an opportunity to either become more tolerant than a blade of grass or to become more humble than a blade of grass or both. So now, taking that into consideration, just from a purely, let's say, academic point of view, as if you were an academic coming to the Hare Krishna movement to do a study, you might conclude by studying our philosophy that no one in the Hare Krishna movement would have any issue with resentment, right? Because they believe in karma, they believe whatever happens, they deserve worse, they believe if someone comes to disturb them, it's just God sending them someone to teach them how to become more humble. Just help them. Prabhu, I don't like you. Thank you, you're helping me become more humble. That's what somebody might come to understand until they live in the Hare Krishna movement, and then they'll understand something else. That even though they believe that whatever happens is destined to their karma, they tend to blame others for their suffering. It's a contradiction, isn't it? Srila Prabhupada said, do not become angry with the agent of your karma. It's a contradiction to blame the agent of your karma. And one of the most amazing contradictions is that we know, every one of us knows, if this world were perfect, if there were no suffering, if you woke up every morning in merry old England and it was 23 degrees and the high temperature was 26, most of you wouldn't even be here. And it was sunny and there were palm trees with coconuts and mangoes and lychees. When I first went to South Africa, they said, you cannot make a white South African a devotee. I said, I can't believe that. I found out it was true. And the ones who joined, they never stayed. Now it's different because South Africa is not so nice, so they're coming. But in those days, it was so nice, it was so difficult to get a white South African to become a devotee. And if they became a devotee, it was even more difficult to get them to stay for a period of time. So we are well aware by our own experience that suffering has actually caused us to become devotees and it chastens us as devotees. Right? We know we need it. And it's there in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. So you ask the question, Krishna made this world. He made so many problems in this world. Why? We know the answer, because we need it. Right? So we bow down to Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's words, and Krishna says, Dukalayama Sashutam, we bow down. This is Bhagavad Gita. We preach it enthusiastically. People come on the Sunday feast. You're all suffering. Surrender to Krishna. This world is miserable. You're getting old. You're dying. And then somebody brings us that lesson personally into our life. And what do? We call him an abuser. We bow down to the Bhagavad Gita. This is the message of God. The world is suffering. And that same lesson is brought to us by an individual. And what do we say? We blame him for our problem. Is that a contradiction? Should we bow to one and not bow to the other? One brings the lesson. Krishna brings the lesson in words. The other brings the lesson in action. We bow to one, hit the other one on the head. Is that hypocrisy? So this is... Now let's broaden that reality beyond the topic of forgiveness as a general principle. We have principles. We have philosophy. And we have our lives. And they're not always the same, are they? So we do a very interesting exercise in the forgiveness workshop. And I'll tell you what it is. And you can probably do it very quickly in your head. And it's very revealing. I ask the devotees, please write down what you believe, especially in relation to spiritual life. So they write down, I believe japa is important. I believe reading Bhagavatam is important. I believe rising early is important. I believe serving the devotees are important. Whatever is important. So write it down. So they write it down. Then I asked them another question. I said, if I didn't know you, and I work for a company, and the company assigned me to find out what you believe. And the way they did this is they put surveillance cameras on you. So I saw you 24 hours a day. I saw you everywhere. I didn't see you in the bathroom, but I saw you everywhere else. In your car, at work, at home, and my job was solely to find out what you believe. And you could not tell me what you believe. The only way I could understand what you believe is by looking at what you do. And these cameras have audio, so I can hear what you say. Do you think both lists would match? For most devotees, unfortunately, they don't. The devotee who said, japa is the most important thing in my life. Maybe they got up late that morning or the next morning and they, you know, were Ram Ram Nish Nish while they're driving or on the train or something, you know. The one who said the Srimad Bhagavatam is my life and soul spent more time reading the newspaper and watching the news than reading Bhagavatam. So you see, you begin to see we're not always aligned with what we think we believe, what we're supposed to believe. So when you say, I believe it, what you're really saying, if you don't live it, you're saying, well, I'm supposed to believe it, I'd like to believe it, I should believe it, right? But believing it's another thing. So, here we are in the Hare Krishna movement with many devotees who are still, or if we have one devotee, that's too many, carrying within their hearts some resentment for how they were treated by somebody inside the movement or outside the movement. Okay, so now let's look at this from a purely spiritual perspective. Srila Prabhupada said, prepare fully for going back home, back to Godhead. So tomorrow morning at 3:30, I'm leaving. If I'm not prepared fully, packed up and ready to go, I'll be late, right? So I have to prepare fully. Pack my bags, all the loose ends, right? So if you're going to prepare fully for going back home, back to Godhead, don't take a lot of baggage with you, because if you're overweight, you can't get on the plane because they have a baggage limitation. So, resentment is part of your overweight baggage. Do you need to take resentment with you? Can you even get back to Godhead if you take it? Now start to think about all the baggage that we carry that is so important to us on this plane. That is our overweight baggage that they will not allow on the plane back to God, that we can't take. Isn't it interesting to think in those terms? Be prepared fully to go back home, back to Godhead. I have resentment. It's burning in my heart. What's that all about? That's not how you go back to Godhead, is it? No. That we have to leave, that's part of this plane of existence. It's not part of that plane. And when you live in this plane of existence on the material level, entangled in the modes of nature, you can't make it to that plane. So, sadhana bhakti, what's sadhana bhakti about? Sadhana bhakti is about living on this plane, even if you have the tendency to live on this plane, right? Fake it until you make it. That's what sadhana bhakti is about. It's rules are there for people who don't spontaneously follow, right? That's why you have rules. Why do you have laws? Because somebody might steal something, so you have a law against stealing. So, in the spiritual world, there's no influence of the modes of nature. So we, as devotees, practice living like the transcendentalists. We're supposed to talk about Krishna, right? We're not supposed to talk about mundane things. Who got married, who got divorced, the latest movie, the latest sports game. If you like to talk about those things, that secures your position in this plane, right? Because this plane is the plane where people talk about this world. And that plane is the plane where people talk about that world. So if you want to go to that world, that's what you talk about. If you want to stay in this world, this is what you talk about. It's pretty simple, isn't it? You don't have to be a math major to figure that one out. If you do what people do in this world, this is the world you stay. If you do what people do in that world, that's the world you go to. So if you're absorbed in material activity, this is the place for it. This place is suited. This is a great place for gossip because there's so much to gossip about because everybody is crazy. And you could talk about all the crazy things everybody does for lifetimes. Right? Isn't it? There's unlimited things to talk about. There'll never be an end. People will always do something stupid and you can talk about it and try to churn the ocean of the nectar of gossip. Right? But if you do that, then you secure your place in this world. Right? Does that make sense? If you do activities in the modes of nature, this is where you go. So, What's resentment? What mode is that in? On the scale of the higher modes to the lower modes, where does it exist? Low, ignorance. It's anger. Prabhupada says it's anger. The difference between anger and resentment is anger will come and go, resentment will stay. You get angry, you get over it. You get angry, you don't get over it, that's called resentment. That is symptomatic of the mode of ignorance. Now, let's look at this. Statement by Srila Prabhupada. Very interesting statement. The foremost quality of the brahmanas is to forgive. The foremost quality of the brahmanas is to forgive. Why? Because a brahmana is situated in what mode? Sattvaguna. And when one is situated in sattvaguna, naturally they forgive. That's a symptom. Brahminical culture. What did Prabhupada always say? You need Brahmins as the head. Why? Because the Brahmins aren't selfish. The Brahmins aren't petty. Right? The Brahmins simply think of the welfare of others. They bless. Even the Kshatriyas, they're interested in protection. Right? So that's still a higher mode. They want to help people. Brahmins want to help people. So resentment is not a brahminical quality. It's a quality of the mode of ignorance. And as devotees, we're cultivating goodness. We're cultivating brahminical qualities. So that's why Prabhupada said it's the foremost quality of the Brahman. Compassion, kindness, this is all brahminical. Right? Are we practicing, are we learning how to become brahminical? Is that where the Krishna conscious movement is? Yes. We have a brahminical, you could call it Vaishnav culture, brahminical culture. That's what we're doing. So, think about it. If we want to be Brahmins, then we have to see such things as jealousy and envy and resentment and fault finding. We have to see those things as simply petty actions of the mode of ignorance that have nothing to do with brahminical life. That have nothing to do with Vaishnavism. That have nothing to do with saving the world. They're just little, stupid, petty things that we get hung up on. Now, let's look at this. Let's expand this a little bit. A Brahman in the mode of goodness, he's always thinking about the welfare of others, right? And if you're always thinking about the welfare of others, you're not so concerned about how you feel. But if you're in the mode of ignorance, you tend to be extremely concerned with how you feel. So, Prabhu said something or did something and he hurt me and now I'm upset. And all I'm thinking about now is how upset I am. And how angry I am and how mad I am and how much I don't like him. And when I see him, my blood boils. I can't stop thinking about him. Is that how a Brahmin thinks? You see, Brahmins think about the welfare of others. Shudras. What did Prabhupada say is a qualification of a Shudra? One who laments. That's Shudra. Ah, I'm so angry at him. I can't get over it. That's Shudra. That's not Brahmin. Brahmins are concerned with blessing. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said something amazing. He said, and most devotees don't know this, most devotees don't realize what a foundational place forgiveness holds in bhakti. He said, when you have affection, he said affection, why did he say this? Affection for Krishna is called love. And affection for the living entities is called compassion. Daya. And he said a devotee, and he said, and humility, the devotee thinks in humility, he thinks, who am I to do anything to hurt anybody? He said, that's the devotee's humility. Because resentment means you want to get back. Did you know that? You want to get back. In our workshops, we do two exercises which illustrate this point. One exercise is I asked devotees, I said, if Krishna appeared to you in front of you and said, I will put my hand on your heart and whatever resentment is in your heart, I will pull it out. Would you allow him to do that? And some devotees realize they wouldn't. Said, no, this person who hurt me does not deserve my forgiveness. Krishna, I won't let you do it. It's true. And then the other exercise we do, we ask the devotees, we say, what are you getting? What benefit are you getting from your resentment? And we, a whole flip chart. I get to blame somebody. I get the pity of my friends. You know, compassion of my friends. I have excuses for not succeeding. You know, on and on and on. So, it's very important to understand that any quality, the quality of resentment. What's a better word? It's not a characteristic. It sounds too nice. We need something else. Symptom. Anything. That'll include everything now. Anything in that category of the lower modes of nature, right? Resentment, jealousy, and so forth. We have to realize we're holding on to it. We are the ones who hold on to it, and we are the ones who can let it go. It doesn't just, you know, it's like they say in the world of Weight Watchers, food doesn't just land in your mouth automatically. You actually have to put it in there and eat it. That's what they tell people who are overweight. No, I don't know why I'm so fat. Well, the food, you're sleeping at night with your mouth open and pizza and ice cream is falling out of the roof. No, you're putting it in your mouth. So it may feel like resentment. It just fell out of the sky. This person hurt me and I don't know what I can do. I don't know how to forgive him. No, you're holding on to it because you're getting something from it. And one of the things we get to get back at the person. We can blackmail them. Do that again. I'll put it on the internet. So obviously we didn't learn this in Krishna, at least I hope we didn't learn this in Krishna consciousness. You're not supposed to learn this in Krishna consciousness. We learned this before we came to Krishna consciousness. So I would like to make the point that as devotees who are endowed with a mission to uplift the world beyond the modes of ignorance and passion, we cannot be in those modes and passion and successfully do it. It's hypocritical. And Prabhupada said he was upset when so many brahminically initiated devotees were not following the principles, or even first initiated. And he said, first you can give more liberally, but second we must be very strict. And he said, It is hypocritical because we preach against so-called Brahmins by birth, and if we give second initiation and we don't live as Brahmins, we are guilty of what we're criticizing others of doing. So think about it in those terms, that we're developing a Brahminical culture, and if we're dealing with these petty issues that are predominantly in the mode of ignorance, that's wrong. And that's not the way we're going to spread Krishna consciousness. Because our service to people is to uplift their consciousness. And how can we uplift them if our consciousness is in the modes of nature? If we're holding on to resentment within our own heart, how effective are we going to be in helping others rise above the mode of ignorance? We're not going to be that effective. I mean, you can preach to them, but ultimately, who we are is the real preaching. That's much more powerful preaching, who you are. Like Gandhi said, my life is my message. Right? So when we show up, there's a message that comes with us. We don't come without a message. Whether you like it or not, you are a walking billboard. So when we rise above these petty weaknesses of heart, such as envy, jealousy, resentment, and so forth, when we show up, people will feel something different about us. They'll feel, I feel something different. You're not like everybody else. Anyone ever tell you that? No? Well, you must be doing something wrong. They're supposed to tell you that. When you're out in the workplace and say, I feel so peaceful when I'm around you. You're different. That's what they're supposed to say. Now, very nice story. One of my favorite stories. Should I tell you one of my favorite stories?
Yes.
You don't know this story because this story was told to me by Prabhupada's servant. And I don't think he told it to anybody. You know, it's really cool if you're the only one who knows the story. Then you can tease people. Should I tell you? I'm the only one who knows it. You want to hear it? Do I get Mahaprasadam if I tell it?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll tell it. In Mayapur, you give class, you don't even get maha. In Vrindavan, you get maha. So it's nice to get maha when you give class. So, there was a time when airlines had smoking sections and non-smoking sections. Any of you old enough to remember that? Raise your hand if you remember that. Okay. Now we know that. Wow. How old do you have to be to remember that? Well, you know, someone could have been on the plane when they were 5 years old, but that's like the 80s, right? Isn't it? 97? That late? I think we got banned earlier in America. Anyway, in those days they had a section if you wanted to smoke. Of course, if you were sitting right next to it. So there was a movie in America. Because the devotees were in airports. So they had a movie called Airports. I think Airport 1, 2, and 3. And it always had devotees in it, right? So in this movie, in this scene, there was an airline called, I think it was called Transcendental Airways. So in these days, when you would get your ticket, they would say, you want to sit in the smoking section or the non-smoking, right? Any of you who took a plane, you know, smoking, non-smoking. So in this movie, they'd go to buy their ticket on Transcendental Airways and they ask them, do you want the chanting section or the no chanting section? Because they're always making spoofs on devotees. Haribo, Jai. And in the movie, they took the chanting section. So anyway, so Prabhupada was in the non-smoking section and there were some rugby players. It was a flight to South Africa. And from India, and the rugby players were rowdy. I guess that's kind of a polite way of describing rugby players. Actually, they're rowdy on steroids is a better description. And they were smoking in the non-smoking section. So Pushta Krishna called a flight attendant, which in those days were called the stewardess, because they were only females, right? When I call them stewardess, my wife says, they're not stewardess, they're flight attendants. Sisirara Gokulanandi Kije. So, this devotee, Prabhupada's servant, asked the flight attendant to ask them to stop smoking. So, she obliged his request. But, later in the flight, guess what happened with the rowdy rugby players? What do you think they did? In spite of the fact that they were in the non-smoking section, in spite of the fact that they were asked not to smoke when they smoked, what do you think they did?
Smoke again.
Smoke again. Must be a qualification for being a rugby player. You don't listen to anybody. So then Prabhupada's servant proceeded, as before, to call a flight attendant, and Prabhupada stopped him and said something very significant, which I'll tell you the next time I come to the manor. I come every 7 years. So. He said, just tolerate it. If you can't tolerate it, what's the difference between you and an ordinary person? Or an ordinary karmi, I don't know. Ordinary something, person or karmi. And that struck me very deeply. I said, yes, okay. We're devotees. So now that you're a devotee, what's the difference between you and me and everybody else? Should be a difference, right? If you're a devotee, right? So let's relate that to the topic. Now, if we carry resentment in our heart, if we carry grudges in our heart, and we say, I just can't give it up, I don't know how to give it up, or worse, I don't want to give it up, because I was hurt so badly, so deeply. Okay, we recognize you were hurt. We recognize something was done that wasn't right to you. But now what do you do? That's the thing. It's not that people don't hurt us. People hurt us. Sometimes temple presidents hurt us. Sometimes GBCs hurt us. Sometimes gurus hurt us. They leave. We are hurt. Yes, it's real. But now what do? What is the difference between you and an ordinary person? What does an ordinary person do when they're hurt, when they're deeply hurt, when they're hurt to the core of their heart? What do? They can't forget it. They can't give it up. I'll never forget that. We don't want to be ordinary people. We want to be Brahmins. So now let's go back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Remember what I said? I said, when you love God, when you have affection for God, it's called love. When you have affection for the living entities, it's called daya, compassion. And when you have humility, you think, how could I, such an insignificant soul as I, do anything to want to hurt anyone? That's humility. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something very interesting, which reveals the position of forgiveness. And I don't know if all of you know this. I don't think most of us know this. This is in the book Jiva Dharma. He says, and the bhava, or the emotion between compassion and humility, when you mix them up in an alchemical process, he didn't say that, when you mix them, then forgiveness comes. You take compassion, affection for the conditioned souls, with the humility that I could not do anything to harm anyone because I'm not that important that I should harm anyone on my account. You put them together, and the emotion in between those is forgiveness. And he said, this is what bhakti is made of. It's made of compassion and humility. That's what bhakti is. You don't have bhakti without that. And when you have that, you have forgiveness, which then emphasizes how important forgiveness is, because that's what bhakti is. It's the symptom of it. It's a characteristic of it. You can't have it without it. Isn't that interesting? Because I think sometimes devotees think it's like a upa dharma. It's like a moral principle, take it or leave it, If you want to be moral, be forgiving. If you're not, it's okay. Just chant Hare Krishna. But here he's saying, no, this is actually foundational. Interesting, isn't it? So, my realization after 8 years of teaching forgiveness is that when we can't forgive, it's due to a lack of compassion. But what is so paradoxical and simultaneously interesting is that I may not be able to forgive somebody, but if I hurt somebody else, I certainly want them to forgive me. Yes? No, Prabhu, you don't have to forgive me. Just, beat me up. I deserve it. No. Maybe when you're on the Uttama Adhikari platform, you might feel like that. But generally, on our platform, if we do something that disturbs someone to the point that they are holding a grudge against us, certainly we would hope and pray and wish and desire that they forgive us. But this person, he hurt me. I'm not forgiving him. I can't forgive him. I don't know how to. I don't want to. So let's put that into a little mantra. I want mercy for myself, but I want justice for others. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being Krishna consciousness and 1 not being Krishna conscious, where does that sit? minus, at least minus one, right? Now we go back to the first point of alignment. I'm going to tell you a story that's going to make you feel really bad. You may not want even to eat breakfast after you hear this story, but it's important. And I want you to feel bad. We should feel bad. This story will make you happy also, but it'll make you feel bad. Do I have permission to tell you? It's a wonderful story. What'll make you feel sad is there was a school in a community of Amish people who are Christians who are based off the land. They're self-sufficient. They don't drive motorized vehicles. And they had their own school. And one crazy man went into their school with a gun, made all the boys leave. You know, small school, maybe 20 or 30. Made all the boys leave and lined up 9 girls and shot all of them, and 5 of them died. And then he shot himself. And that evening, the parents, all or some of the parents of the girls who were killed, visited the man's wife. Imagine you were the wife of that man. How would you feel? Devastated, right? Your husband just killed 5 innocent girls and injured 4 and shot himself. They went to her to give her a message. And the message was not, I hate your guts, and if it was legal, I would slice your head off. The message was, we forgive you for what your husband did. And the second message was, if you want, because your husband is now dead, you can live with us and we will take care of you for the rest of your life. Amazing, isn't it? Now, you want to hear the sad part? That's the kind of the happy part. You want to hear the sad part? Nobody wants to hear the sad part. Now what do I do? I have to tell you the sad part, because if I don't tell you the sad part, the story won't have full significance. This is the sad part. In my forgiveness workshops, I ask a question. What question do you think I ask in relation to this story? It begins with if. And it has within that sentence the Hare Krishna movement. What do you think I ask? If this happened in the Hare Krishna movement, would we do what the Amish people did? What do you think the answer I get is? And I've done this workshop a lot, and I get the same answer everywhere. What do you think that answer is? No. I get it 100%, from 100% of the participants 100% of the time. That's interesting, isn't it? Isn't it? That we have a philosophy which tells us that forgiveness is the bhava emotion between compassion and humility. Obviously, humility and compassion are essential ingredients to bhakti. And if this happened in the Hare Krishna movement, there's no way. Yeah. If it happened in the Hare Krishna movement, the first thing we would do is call a meeting, get the council members. Right? But the problem is that half the council members may be in the mood of Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, so they're not going to say, hey, forgive. They're going to say, take them to court, you know, sue them, you know, get some money from them. You know. And the Kshatriyas will be talking about, you know, now we... the security measures. I mean, of course, these are real things we have to deal with. So, I believe it was in Westminster Abbey, after this event, the pastor there gave a speech. And he talked about this event, and he said, this was amazing. He said, it wasn't even a decision. They didn't even decide to do this. He said, this is who they were as people. They were forgiving. There was no decision. They just did it because they had become what they believed. There was no difference. It was like, this is what I believe and this is what I am. They weren't different. That was this lecture. Amazing. That was such a wonderful insight into understanding this action. He said, it was not a decision. They had to at all think about. It is who they had become as people. So it's such a nice thought, isn't it? This is our philosophy, and who am I in relation to that philosophy? Am I becoming the philosophy? So this is what I have learned as a teacher who teaches forgiveness. This lesson stood out so strongly. Are we becoming what we are supposed to be? I myself had huge issues with forgiveness with authorities, because authorities is a big target for resentment. And I'll tell you a nice story. You'll be very happy to hear this story. This is so sweet. And then I'll take questions, because if I go on, then I'll need 3 more hours. So, unfortunately, we have a history in our movement of some of our leaders giving up their positions as Diksha Gurus because they weren't able to maintain their Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, in my life, I worked in projects where 3 of those leaders left the projects. That means projects I had dedicated my life to. When those leaders left, those projects crashed significantly. So it's like, you know, it's like you're at the beach and you build your sandcastle. You spent, you know, 14 years building it, and some little kid comes and jumps on it. You know, something like that, you know. You know? You build your house on the Gaza Strip. The day it's finished, it's bombed. Something like that. It's just the whole thing collapsed. You know, the senior devotees, you've been through it twice with the same 2 gurus that I've been through. One in South Africa, one in Mauritius. And they were both the gurus here. And I went through it with 3 of them. And another one in another place. So I was damaged. And I was severely damaged by one of them because I had spent the most time working in his zone. And it was interesting because at least I don't know how one of them left, but 2 of them, when they left, they didn't tell anybody. They just left. And you want to hear something really interesting that nobody knows? The first time in your life you're going to hear it? One of the gurus that was guru here, I was the last person with him. That he, you know, before he left, I was the person who took him to the airport when he never came back. And I was with him in America to work on a project. That's why we were there, and that's why he was there. And he never said anything, and he left, and he never came back. The other guru that I was working with, that I've been working pretty closely with for 12 years in one place. So we built up, at that point, we built up what was considered by most devotees the best temple in the United States. When he left, the temple crashed. I was very upset. He didn't tell us he was leaving. He just left. We found out later. It was devastating. So I know what it means to hold on to a grudge. I was devastated. Total loss of trust. Just, you know, betrayed. And then, into the year 2010, he left in 1986. The year 2010 was the first time I saw him. That is how many years? 18 years? Is that right? 28, right? 86, 96, yeah. 24. 24 years later, I saw him for the first time. And it was amazing what he said. Would you like to hear what he said when he saw me? Yes. Only 3 people want to hear. Okay, I'll tell you during prasadam. You can come sit next to me. He only said 2 things. He said, "I know I let you down. Please forgive me." Wow. And for about 18 years, I was holding on to this resentment. And the whole time, he was regretful for what he did. Isn't that interesting? Now, I'm going to tell you something that's even more interesting. It's kind of the icing on the cake here. with cherries and whipped cream and walnuts. And I'll put a drop a little bit of hot chocolate. You can eat chocolate. You eat chocolate here? Or is that banned? Carob. I have to tell you a funny story about chocolate. But if I tell you the story, I'll forget what I'm supposed to tell you. So remind me to tell you the funny story about chocolate. But this is the icing on the... this is the carob. As Sridhar said, give me some of that imitation carob. He didn't like carob. He liked the imitation carob. So this is the imitation carob on top of the... Krishna revealed something to me through this event. Okay, this person left. Our temple crashed. It crashed. Practically every department head had to go out and collect money and give up their department. The bhakti leader had to give up his department, congregational membership, like everybody had to just go out and collect money because we lost so many devotees who were devastated by what happened. We couldn't even pay our bills. Nobody wanted to. Everybody lost their heart and soul. So I was so upset. How could you do this to us? How could you leave us and leave us in this condition, right? But later on, Krishna revealed something that was missing from my consciousness. And what was missing from my consciousness was compassion. I was upset. And when you're upset, there's no room for compassion. You're either upset or compassionate, but not both. Isn't it? Anger. What does anger do? Does anger hurt other people? Does it? We use anger to hurt. When we're angry, we hurt other people. And that's part of the reason we're angry. We actually want to hurt them. What does compassion do? Compassion helps people. Right? Krishna revealed the lesson to me, a very important lesson. He said, Mahatma, when this person left, you were very angry and upset. And you broke, and all you had were negative thoughts towards this person. Full of resentment, full of anger, full of hatred. Anytime you thought of him, every time I thought of him, I just thought, he has no integrity. He should have saved himself. Absolutely no integrity whatsoever. He just let the whole thing fall. How could any person with even one ounce of integrity do this? That's how I thought. Just mad, just angry, boiling over. For 18 years, and it didn't abate. 18 years I felt that way. And then after I forgave him, I went through a process and started teaching forgiveness. I realized an important lesson, that compassion is the antitoxin, is the antidote to resentment. And Krishna revealed something. He said, Mahatma, what you should have done is realized that this poor devotee, he was only 26 when he became guru. He'd only been a devotee 7 years. He took sannyas at the age of 25. He had never had any relationship with women. And by the age of 35, he hit a point where he was starting to bottom out in his Krishna consciousness, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't hold on. He wasn't going to make it. And he had the integrity to walk out before he fell on his face. And he walked out with the intention that I will come back and serve Prabhupada again. And he did. Or he's about to do it any month now. Amazing, isn't it? So what should I have been thinking? I should have been thinking, can I help him? I should have been thinking, I should stay in touch with him. Say, Prabhu, I totally understand what you went through. I totally understand how difficult it is. If there's anything I can do, I'm always your friend. Confide in me. I'm always there for you. That's what I should have done, but I didn't. It took me about 19 years, I finally realized that's what I should have done. That's Krishna consciousness. That's Brahminical culture. That's compassion. The other thing was not Krishna consciousness. It was simply the mode of ignorance, and I was stuck, and I didn't know how to get out, and I didn't think I could get out, and I didn't want to get out. And the result of that is that damaged my Krishna consciousness. It damaged my service to Prabhupada. Because of that event, I backed to the sidelines. And I didn't get this into the center of any projects. If I would have forgiven him It would have absolved me of that negativity that was preventing me from getting involved. And you will see, if you can help a devotee overcome their resentment, you will see them come closer and closer to the movement if they are far away. But if they don't overcome it, they'll stay. Because what resentment does is it allows an event from the past to affect the present. And that's the mode of ignorance. Isn't it? An event from the past is now influencing you in the present. So you can't act the way you really want to act because this event has affected you. You're acting in response to something of the past. So for 18 years, I acted in response to the past. And I didn't get involved much anymore in management because I was burnt. I lost trust in leadership. 3 leaders left, I lost trust. So now I was acting according to what happened in the past. But once I forgave, it absolved me of that connection to those events. And now I can act according to what? What is proper. Not according to a response to reactions, to actions of the past. So when you hold on to resentment, you're being bound by the past. And I will end this class with one of my favorite statements, kind of like a Buddhist aphorism. And it goes like this. It's a definition of forgiveness. I'll give you 2 definitions. They're nice. Forgiveness means to give up all hope for a better past. Forgiveness means to give up all hope for a better past. It happened. It's gone. Move forward. Mark Twain said, forgiveness is the fragrance, the violet. You have violet flowers here? Violets, they're fragrant. Forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet leaves on the boot that crushes it. Forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet leaves on the boot that crushes it. What did Bhaktisiddhanta say? When somebody crushes you, you think, thank you, Krishna, for sending this person. He's helping me become more humble than a blade of grass. Thank you, Prabhu. That's your fragrance on the person who hurt you. Now, when the sadhu was picking up the scorpion was biting him. What did the sadhu do? He picked him up again because he wanted to help the scorpion out of the water. And when he was asked, why did you do that? He said, well, I was trying to help the scorpion, and the scorpion was biting me, and I realized that it's his nature to bite. So even if someone helps him, he'll bite because that's his nature. So I thought, well, it's my nature to be kind. So even though he's biting me, if he's not going to give up his nature to bite, why should I give up my nature to be kind, right? Now, I just remembered one more thing. Hold your questions. This is really revealing, and it's fun. When you squeeze an orange, what comes out of the orange? What kind of juice? Why does orange juice come out and not pineapple juice? Because it's an orange. Very intelligent brahmachari here. When you squeeze an orange, orange juice comes out because that's what's inside. Very good. Haribo, yeah, you guys are smart. Okay, now I have a question for you, Prabhus and Matajis. When you are squeezed, what comes out of you? What comes out of what? Krishna comes out of you? What comes out of you? Prasadam? Blood, oh yeah. The kids always say blood. That's not the right answer. When you're squeezed, whatever comes out of you is what's inside of you. And when we're squeezed, what do? We blame the squeezer for what comes out of us. Right? Don't we? Now, here's a phenomenon in ISKCON. I don't know if it still happens, but it's quite hilarious. The brahmacharis are living peacefully in the brahmachari ashram. And one fine day, some very attractive woman decides to move in the brahmacharini ashram. And one brahmachari somehow notices her and tells another brahmachari, Prabhu, don't look at her. She's lusty. Now my question to you, ladies and gentlemen, is she lusty or is he lusty? We know the answer. So brahmacharis, don't ever say that, because once you say that, we know you're guilty of lust. Okay, she's the catalyst to the lust that's inside of you, but she can't bring it out of you if it's not inside of you. So when Haridas Thakur is being beaten, what came out of him? Oh, Krishna, these people who are beating me are going to suffer. Can you forgive them? Because that's what's inside of him. You know, people might think, he's crazy. You know, take him to the psychiatrist, you know. He's not normal to think that way. Can he think any other way? He can't, because that's all that's inside of him. What else is going to come out of him when he's being beaten? Compassion, right? So, we are supposed to be like that, right? Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture means mode of goodness. That means kindness, compassion. Therefore, we go back to that statement. What did Prabhupada would say? The foremost quality of the Brahmins is forgiveness. That's their nature. You can't get anything else out of them. It doesn't matter. Knock them in the head, tell them they're an idiot, you know, steal their sweet ball, whatever. You only get forgiveness out of them because that's their nature. So that's the culture we're trying to develop. And so it's very important we understand that. That's where we're supposed to go. We're supposed to take the philosophy and put it together. And become. They are people who become. They didn't have to make a decision. It's who they were as people. So we have to become Krishna conscious, right? Isn't it? Yeah. That's what I learned from 8 years of teaching forgiveness. It's pretty exciting. And you know what happens at the end of the workshop? The devotees say, Prabhu, you need to take this all around the world. You need to take this to every temple. There's a lot of resentment in ISKCON. It's true, but it shouldn't be. Right? Okay. Thank you. I'll let you ask some questions. Yes.